In a world where action films are dumped in theaters and TV, dead on arrival.
I can't go on living this lie!
You need a hero.
Last time I trusted someone, I lost an eye.
You need a helper.
Hello, hello, nothing to see here.
You need a healer.
That is affirmative.
You need...
We're on the air.
Professor Rick's Action Film Autopsy.
Miko, hi everybody. It's Rick Myers. I'm back! I'm back from Asia. I'm sorry I left you. I'm sorry the website collapsed on you while I was gone.
Oh, no.
But now we're... Yes, it did. The website disappeared. That's why we're doing the recording today. Wasn't Mike's fault.
It's just easy to blame him.
It's entirely Mike's fault. Anyway, yeah, it went down, so that's why we're doing the recording now, because by all rights, in terms of our usual schedule, it should have been last week, but now it's this week, because the site went down and the Drew Hendrickson episode came out a week late. So we're coming out on time now that we're back on schedule. Welcome to the Mayflowers episode of the podcast. And I am here, Rick Myers, with my friends. Say your name.
Miko.
And my other friend.
Jen.
And you're still my friends even after the movie we just saw.
Mm.
Okay. And okay, again, we'll start. Since I've been away for a couple of weeks, I'm still going to start with a theme song. There'll be spoilers. Oh, boy, there'll be spoilers. There'll be spoilers. There'll be spoilers. Spoilers. There'll be spoilers. There'll be spoilers. We want better films, so there will be spoilers. Now, we have, we were going to put these movies in the order that we've seen them, but we literally just stepped away a few moments ago from seeing the movie. Shall we even say what the movie is, or should we just talk about it?
We can just talk about it. People can figure it out.
People can figure it out. It's, we hated it.
Yes.
I think we can safely say we hated it.
Oh, yeah.
Holy shit.
We'll talk.
It's a long movie.
It's actually not long. It just seems long.
It seems long.
Yeah.
Check my phone like
it's
seven times.
It's a slow-paced movie.
Yeah.
Without a lot of action.
Very
with zero payoff. It was very predictable.
It had a payoff, but it had a miserable...
No, that payoff
hateful,
was not...
It had a hateful payoff.
Okay, a hateful payoff.
You see, I do not go to the movies to wallow in venal... Mean-spirited, thank you, backstabbing, and the word for exercises in futility, which is what this was. There was, what is the point of this movie other than to wallow in hateful destruction? I mentioned this to you during the end credits, and now I will explain it to our listeners. This movie is the sci-fi version of Friday the 13th, Part 2. And it should have been advertised, and it kind of was, using the Friday the 13th ad campaign. If you remember, Friday the 13th was the first major slasher film.
I was like, well, I probably wasn't born yet.
Yeah, you weren't. That was bought by a major studio. All the other slasher films prior to that were released as independent movies, as exploitation films. Mm. Paramount Pictures bought Friday the 13th and released it without even pretending that it was something that it wasn't. And what it was a body count movie.
Mm-hmm.
They advertised it that you could go and enjoy watching these teenagers die.
Mm.
It wasn't about a hero, you know, a Dirty Harry or a Jaws or a hero fighting, you know, fighting against the villain and triumphing at the end. Mm. The Omen broke that tradition. Now all horror movies are doing it, and including this sci-fi horror movie from a great legacy. I was excited about this movie because, as I mentioned to you in my Bill Frakey way,
mm-hmm.
I was on the set of the original Alien back in 1979, which was directed by the same director who did this one, Ridley Scott, but when he was much younger.
Going downhill, man.
Well, he is a director who does what he's able to do with studios want to back him up. He, whatever. I mean, for 80 years old, it was a nice piece of technical work, of course. But I don't know if this was his story or if he told the screenwriters. The screenwriters were John Logan, who did a Skyfall, Penny Dreadful on television, Gladiator.
Oh, what the hell?
Yeah, but he's...
What's your excuse?
He also did Spectre. And then also Dante Harper, who was a production manager up until now. He was a production manager on like more than 40 movies, and then he was promoted. And this is his very first co-screenplay credit. And so,
I mean, I gotta give props.
I'm curious to see who's the lead editor is, because it feels like this film has some footage, and then the editing, there's definitely some shift in story that was.
Did they do reshoots on it? Like, I didn't follow this.
I have no idea.
There may have been reshoots, but whatever the... But why would there be reshoots? Because, you know, what, the original version had somebody heroic surviving? The original version had something triumphant happen? The original version had humans being seen as anything other than garbage to be slaughtered? Mm. You know, it's just a very... Again, I don't go to movies to wallow in misery. And this, ultimately, this was... More than wallowing in misery and exercises in futility, if you recall the ending in which our, and again, there'll be spoilers, in which our hero recreates the Ripley sequence from the first movie, only to be betrayed heinously.
And predictably.
And predictably, uh-huh. because we all pretty much saw that coming, which made the last
30 minutes
to be, easily. Again, an exercise in futility, because it's kind of like, rather than sitting there going, no, don't let that happen, you're sitting there going, all right, we know what's going to happen. Yeah. This is just going to be, it's just going to be how it plays out. And praying that she'll realize her mistake before it's too late.
Right.
But of course she doesn't. And she pays the ultimate price for it, with promise of more misery to come in the supposedly two sequels, prequel sequels.
Did you say two sequels?
Supposedly.
Oh, supposedly. God.
Yeah. But we'll see. And I know this movie's going to do well, at least for the first weekend. I don't know if I
hope word of mouth just kills it.
Well, people may be, you never know, people may be in a majority or enough people may be into misery.
I feel like that's everyone, the hope that everyone had for Prometheus just got shattered.
Well,
and then for some reason, everybody here was like, it's going to be different, it's going to be different. Like, right. Why? Because they didn't call it Prometheus 2? Like, just because they call it Alien?
Well, I think
they called it Friday the 13th.
Same thing with Prometheus. A lot of people, a lot of younger generation might not have seen Aliens franchise, so this is a good kickoff to that world.
Well, yeah, we were talking before, we were saying that this is exactly like The Force Awakens, where this is
a remake and a reboot.
A remake of a reboot.
Right.
And
only it's just like
it's just worse. Miserable.
The like reason why the first film is so iconic, they pretty much like replicated it and then slapped it in the face.
Yes. But also Prometheus, just like which fits into the metaphor of Friday the 13th Part 2, at the end of Friday the 13th, the main heroine survives. Mm-hmm. And you figure that's fine. And then at the end of Prometheus, the main heroine survives, mm-hmm. only to be decapitated at the beginning of this movie, the same way the girl, not the same way, she's not decapitated, I'm just using that as a metaphor, because in Friday the 13th, Volume 2, the girl who survived the first Friday the 13th is decapitated within the first 10 minutes. Mm. So in this movie, our heroine who survived in Prometheus is eradicated in a vicious, horrible, mean-spirited, gotcha way. I kept on expecting that kid from The Simpsons to show up going,
Nelson.
Constantly, Nelson, you're constantly coming up. But let's try, if you have anything more to say about just the horrible misery and wallowing in shit that movie was, go ahead, because then I want to talk about the one action scene. Yeah.
What pissed me off about this film, aside from a number of overly gratuitous scenes that just like were really shitty to women specifically, it was the fact that this film had two villains, and one of those villains didn't matter, and that was the villain that is supposed to be the whole part of this, like the whole major part of the series.
Yeah.
Where as soon as we ended up sitting in a fucking cave room with Michael Fassbender, talking to Michael Fassbender about flutes, I was like, okay, this is really about you two, and you're going to duke it out at the end.
Right.
Kind of thing. And the aliens are just an afterthought. The aliens could be anything. The aliens could be fucking radioactive anacondas.
That's true.
Yes.
That's very true. They were completely pointless. They were just things that were killing people.
Yeah.
That was it.
They could have switched the whole alien with another species.
I wouldn't be surprised if this was like a fucking screenplay for something else, and they were like, we'll just make this an alien.
That's a very, very, very good point. There's also something that was left over from the very first film. I remember talking to H.R. Giger and other people about the sexual content of the first film and how they kind of had to eliminate it.
Mm-hmm.
Because in this movie, at the last possible second, they put in one of the most gratuitous sex scenes I had ever seen wedged into
just
a film.
Yeah, like,
it was just random. It's random.
Yeah, but like,
they were never staggeringly random.
Also, like, there was never a setup. I mean, I get it. They're all kind of sort of couples, but there's never a setup like between those two characters to be lovers.
Yeah.
In the beginning, throughout the film, and all of a sudden they're in the shower together.
I mean, I didn't
both
mind
naked.
That. For me, it was like,
and
first
the aliens,
of all,
exactly.
If the alarm is going off, like you, like a ship like this, like you'd be able to hear that in the shower.
Yeah.
The fact that they couldn't hear because the shower was so loud was bullshit.
again, Friday the 13th. Mm-hmm. It's a Friday the 13th set off, and then
that was it. Was like, they were such horror film cliches of characters.
Even
not
the
just
nudity.
That.
Yes, go ahead. You're going to say it.
Not just that. No.
Go ahead. You're going to say it.
No, I don't. I'm always.
I bet you're going to say it. Go ahead and say it.
No, I was saying how like there's so many of those mistakes in the film where the
it's like, oh, like I'm going to stick my head like and look at this thing.
People didn't act like people should act.
Yeah.
And people,
which is horrible.
Right. They don't act at all. Like, if they had experienced what they had all experienced, they'd be catatonic.
Yeah.
Right.
They wouldn't be having sex in the shower to celebrate the fact that they survived and all the other lovers died. But the worst thing about that scene is that not only is it gratuitous, but it's a setup for a cheap sex shot. Mm-hmm. A cheap sex joke.
That's what bugged me about
it. An alien seat where the alien tail comes up and pokes the girl in the whatever.
Yeah.
In the cooch.
Between the legs.
Between the legs. Was just like, that's what they wanted to do in the first one.
Mm-hmm.
But that would have been better integrated. This was just wedged in the ongoing exercise in hatefulness.
It was so annoying. It was so stupid. Because it's like, I understand, like, I think you take 2 seconds to look at H.R. Giger's work, and you know that there are
sexual
undertones. It's just overtly sexual.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are 300 college papers about, like, the raping of the guy in the first Alien.
Right.
And, you know, the mouth, I forget what it was called.
Facehugger.
The facehugger.
Facehugger,
I was like, the mouth hugger? I was like, that doesn't sound right.
Yeah. That'll do.
But, like,
the face
this
invader.
Was just, like, this served no purpose. None of it served any purpose.
See, so now let's get into, again, I just like we were talking about with Ghost in the Shell. When I said that Scarlett Johansson was cast, that set a tone for all the decisions in the rest of the film.
Uh-huh.
In this movie, I knew we were in trouble when they identified the film taking place in the year 2104, and they were still using bullets.
Mm.
I'm astonished.
That's a good point.
I'm always astonished when they go into these futuristic movies and they have all these incredible spacecraft.
Oh, yeah.
And they're still using guns, which, of course, I mean, I understand that it's kind of an homage to Aliens, the James Cameron's far superior film. But even so, and the rest of the movie is like that. For some reason, there's certain products. Is the gun lobby so strong that even in 2104, they're not letting hand weapons advance in any way?
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And so here they have their laser sights.
That's true.
But we have laser sights
there
now.
There were times where like they had to grab a camping knife, and I was just like, are you fucking kidding
me? Are you fucking kidding me?
Like the girl, the first girl that died, you know, when she's trapped in the room and she grabs a knife, and I'm like, what are you going to fucking do?
They have technology that allows them to go to other planets and cryogenically sleep. But the best they can do for weapons is a knife and a gun?
That's a good point. Well, I didn't even think of that.
There's so many wrong in the technology, in terms of technology standpoint. When they have the ship, so they detected this, you know, planet so far away that's inhabitable.
Inhabitable.
And they would go there. So they've discovered this new planet, so they have to go check it out.
Yeah.
First of all, when they get there, it's storm.
Yeah.
They could wait it out because they would have waited 7 years before they get to another planet.
I know.
They could have just waited out.
Yeah.
That was a shitty setup, too. They're like, oh, we missed this planet.
Yeah.
I was
just
like, aliens advanced enough to, like, I'm cutting you off. I was like,
nothing new
did
there.
Somebody somehow create. No, but for a second, I was like, wow, did somebody, like, create, like, a false planet to, like, lure them in?
No, it wasn't a false planet.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, the way you set it up, like, how do you fucking scan the galaxy and you miss a fucking planet?
And and if you can scan the galaxy, how can't you scan this?
Yeah.
Right now?
Like, how can't you scan people when they re-enter the ship to see if they have any weird pathogens in them?
That's another one of them. So, let's just take that off, from the start, where they get to the planet. If they would have scanned the whole galaxy, why can't they scan the ship? I mean, the planet first. Second of all, when they come to the planet, it doesn't matter like how inhabitable the planet is. You have to wear some kind of protection.
Yeah.
They were going in there hiking style with the GoPro right behind them.
Yeah, with a GoPro. And
that was funny to me.
Yeah, it's idiotic from a scientific standpoint.
That's another word. It's idiotic. Now, let's get to the fight. The fight was...
What fight?
Let me tell you. Well, I'll tell you the fight. The stunt coordinator was Kyle Gardner, who we've met before on this podcast. He did Hunger Games. He's doing Thor Ragnarok. He's doing Pirates 5, which we'll hopefully have on our next podcast. He did Hacksaw Ridge, which is a heck of a movie to do stunt coordinating on. And also, the fight coordinator was Chan Griffin, who was basically has been and continues to be a stuntman, and he was promoted to fight coordinator on this, which is understandable having seen the fight. The fight is between Michael Fassbender and Michael Fassbender.
Oh, that one!
Oh, yeah.
I forgot about that.
This fight, ladies and gentlemen, and other listeners, dogs, pets, whatever else you have there, is the fight equivalent of the guns and the knives in the rest of this movie. You are telling me that guns and knives and medical equipment haven't advanced. They haven't even advanced. They've regressed since Prometheus. Prometheus had better medical stuff than this thing. And this is 10 years beyond Prometheus. They fight using, as far as I can tell, jiu-jitsu. It's mixed martial arts. It's, what are you pointing at, Mika?
The t-shirt.
Oh, the t-shirt.
Yeah.
Why?
Let's put
the Monkey King. Oh, you put it on top. Oh, yeah, because I'm pounding the table. That's a very good point. Very
nice.
Cushioning, yeah, because the last time I recorded, guys, it was all sorts of bumping. Thank heaven that Miko backup recorded this. Mm-hmm. So the fight is also edited to shit.
Yes. I don't even, remember that. I just remember getting thrown on a table and being like, okay. Yeah. Like, first of all, I was like, if my 10-year-old MacBook had to fight my current MacBook, I know which one would win.
Oh, yeah, but the point here...
I was just pissed off.
But the point here is that they're robots, and they're punching each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's the big finale... That. Yeah,
Walter, the newer model, said, I have some few upgrades.
Yeah.
Then he should be, annihilate this guy, like nothing. Instead, take his heart out, grab, snap
his
neck.
Instead, the big climactic moment of the fight is that he's got his knees... It's kind of cool in a way that it's two brothers fighting, 5-year-old brothers fighting, because he's sitting on his shoulders to hold down his arms, and he's punching him repeatedly in the face with his fist, which is the dumbest thing you can do, and one of the least effective things you can do. Mm-hmm. And also, they're robots. Mm-hmm. So why would they fight that way? It reminds me, when I was in Asia, everybody, we're going to have some interviews coming up on the basis of my trip to Asia, but I saw 10 movies on the plane.
Wow.
5 going there, 5 coming back. And one of them was that the last Resident Evil movie, which we didn't get to see. And this fight scene reminded me of the fight scenes in Resident Evil, because Resident Evil didn't feel that one shot was good enough for any one movement. If Mila Jovanovich is going to swing her fist, you have to cut it 3 times during the punch.
Oof.
From 3 different angles during one punch.
Oof, that's rough.
And it was rough, and it got very tiring very quickly. Thankfully, this was a very short fight, but it had the same disease the rest of this movie had, which was stupidity, futility, and hatefulness. So, enough about
and
that.
Not for nothing, you keep talking about visually how it's good, but frankly, when the one alien came out of the dude's chest, that was really bad to me. It looked
awful,
because first of all, it looked like a fully grown xenomorph.
Yeah.
Emerged from his stomach.
Yeah.
Right.
And I was just was it because it was in an egg? And then it, the face, I was like, why? And then also the way it came out, it was, for me, I was in my mind watching, I was like, this is so grossly CG.
Face hugger? Or the,
no, like, so oh, the, yeah, yeah, yeah. Died, right. Face hugger,
so,
got it.
So when back in Alien, when they come out, they're like baby form with the big head.
No, yeah.
But now,
they showed us that too, but
right,
it,
no, no,
it
no.
wasn't even
no, that
like
was the
third
period. This one with the new type of alien, whatever, xenomorph, it was fully formed, like you said. It feels like it just shrunk down.
But I understood that because that was Michael Fassbender's development.
Yeah.
The villain's
development. For me, it wasn't even that it was fully formed. It was just the way it emerged.
It just looked fake.
It looked like shit.
It should. Yeah. It would have been better as a Carlo Rimbaldi puppet.
That's what I was kind of like. That
they should have just had it going for a while.
They should have had a marionette.
Right.
And that would have been even creepier. But by then, the movie was over.
Yeah.
I mean, you were ready to leave at one point.
Oh,
I was ready to leave at one point.
I looked at the clock at 7:07. We had been literally an hour into the film.
Yeah.
And I was like, is this fucking over yet? The whole thing with the flute, the whole setup at the beginning with Michael Fassbender with the original David and the like guy who made him.
Right.
I just was like, I don't fucking care.
Yep.
Yeah, that was boring.
That's a good
That's a good setup though. I was gonna say that setup set up the motivation behind this whole thing.
We've seen that robots and god complexes are not exactly a new concept in sci-fi and in like human existentialism.
But they didn't advance it. This was a regress. This was a retreat.
Right.
This movie was pulled back from everything that had come before it. It was a miserable movie. And I'm glad that we can talk about, but it's a good segue because I saw two movies that you guys haven't seen. So go ahead.
Wait,
I might say one last thing.
Yeah, go for it, guys.
So I am a very picky guy when it comes to shot continuity.
Yeah.
There's two shots in the thing where, okay, one of the bullshit things that they say is like, oh, the storm could go for days or weeks or months or tomorrow, which is when the storm's going to be in the story. But there's two shots in the film while the storm was going on. It was clear as hell.
Yeah.
There's one where Michael Fassbender was talking to Michael Fassbender about, what is it?
Whatever the hell he was talking.
What is the grave of the girl? I forgot the name of the girl. Anyway.
One from the Prometheus, but don't worry. It's not a
problem. Right. And the second shot is when... Daniel, the main girl, was calling the ship. Both of the shots, there's no rain. And then it cuts back, there's rain. Mm-hmm. And it's just back and forth. And it's just like, how can you miss points like this? This is
movie.
You have a team.
Honestly, there was a shot in the beginning where after her husband died and she was laid out all the stuff on the bed, there was two photos like across, like far apart from each other, and it was the same photo.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, the fuck is this?
Well, it's clearly that this was a movie made by people who didn't give a shit.
But you know what though? That I'd like an annoying question.
Yes.
To like, I'm gonna be really annoying right now.
Please.
But like, the alien films tend to end really badly for the protagonist, and I can't help but be annoyed because this is one of those series where they've consistently had female protagonists, and I'm just like, why can the girls never actually win?
Here's the deal. You ready? I get to. No, here we go.
Like, not to get on that.
No. This is good because my podcast is also for my lunatic fringe theories. Here's the deal. The original Alien I was on the set of, I got to meet everybody. Mm-hmm. It was awesome.
So, I know that was originally, it was written as a guy, and
but they changed it, but also it was triumphant.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then the second one was also triumphant.
Yeah.
And James Cameron did it, was awesome. So, David Giler and Walter Hill, the producers, after the first weekend of Aliens, the James Cameron sequel to Alien, they come into 20th Century Fox certain that 20th Century Fox is going to open the vault because, it was super rare, even especially back then, that a sequel made more money than the original.
Mm-hmm.
Aliens did.
Mm-hmm.
So they thought, we are made.
Mm-hmm.
And they waltz into 20th Century Fox and they sit down like emperors and kings and they say there's only two possible plots for the third Alien movie. Ripley goes to the alien planet, the aliens come to Earth. And the executives, according to what I was told, the executives leaned back, crossed their arms, maybe put their feet up on their desk, who knows, and gave them the famous shit-eating grin and said, no, we decided that the third Alien is going to be an art film where about the five steps of accepting death. And according to, I think, Ronald Shusett, who was the original story writer along with Dan O'Bannon of the original Alien, you could hear their screams all the way across town. And for years, Hill and Giler wanted to find out why that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And they investigated and investigated, and they came up with this theory, which many people have poo-pooed, but I pass it on happily, and especially to you, because what happened, according to them, is, and this is the only thing they could come up with, Thelma and Louise had just come out.
Mm-hmm.
For
fuck's sake.
Listen, Thelma and Louise had come out, and apparently some studios were afraid that women would start being able to carry action films and ask for the same amount of money that Mel Gibson and all the white men were getting. And according to the only theory they could come up with, and it's backed up by some other things too, the studios or executives or producers conspired to create four films, at least four films that year, that nominally promoted female heroes, but all four movies were sabotaged to the point where they had to fail.
Mm-hmm.
So they could say, oh, you see, women can't carry a movie.
That sounds like when people point to the fucking Catwoman Halle Berry movie.
Oh,
like,
oh,
women superheroes.
However,
like, go fuck yourself.
Yeah, exactly. However, so the other movies, Alien 3 was the crowning achievement, but there was A Stranger Among Us. Look up these movies, people. The Stranger Among Us. V.I. Warshawski. Another woman-driven, and there's a there was another one I'm forgetting, but Alien 3 was the crowning achievement,
mm-hmm.
because everybody felt there's no way it could fail.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way
mm-hmm.
it could fail. They gave, but hey, people tell me, they gave Sigourney Weaver a producer credit. That was the bribe.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't know this was happening. Mm-hmm. And then they got this untested director who turns out to be great, but of course they sabotaged his final cut,
mm-hmm.
David Fincher. And out come these four movies that year: V.I. Warshawski, A Stranger Among Us, Alien 3, and what's if I remember the fourth one, I'll put it in the supplementals. But all of those movies failed.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
That's the theory as to why Alien became started as a woman loving series and became a woman hating series.
Ugh.
So
what was your experience? Because you said you wrote for the magazine. What was the nature of did you write any, like, fictional stories about Alien Universe?
No, I was working at, I had just stopped working for Starlog. I had started working for Warren Publishing, who put out Famous Monsters of Filmland, Creepy and Eerie magazines.
Mm-hmm.
And they spent a lot of money to buy the rights to do magazine tie-ins for Moonraker, Fly and Joy, Roger Moore, Moonraker, Meteor with Sean Connery, and Alien. And I was either a lead writer or a head writer or a major writer on all three of those magazines, which allowed me to visit the sets, go to the premieres. I got the phone numbers of everybody, and I got to talk to them. I met with H.R. Giger in the Sherry Netherlands and had a wonderful time. And I was able to do articles on all of them for Famous Monsters as well as for the magazine itself.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't do any fiction.
Okay.
But I was privy and I was able to talk to these guys for years afterwards.
Yeah.
That's where they told me their theory on what the hell happened.
Cool.
Mm. Anyway, so, Free Fire.
Oh my God, I'm just so angry.
I
will never get those 2 hours back.
Well, that's my problem. You know, this movie is going on my hit list along with The Omen and Seven.
I think, like, I've never been... Oh, we have to talk about Seven, but not this time.
Yeah,
yeah. But, like... I feel like I've never been, because I tend to just avoid films that I think will make me feel this way.
Right.
Uh-huh.
Me
like,
too.
I feel like I let myself down
by letting
myself watch this film.
I did it
for you, listeners.
And I'm mad at you, movie spoiler. MovieSpoiler.com, I looked you up. I looked up your synopsis for this movie before seeing this movie. I'm sitting in the room waiting for this movie to start.
Were you able to get Gerard to talk to you at all?
No, Gerard didn't get to, Gerard, who had seen it yesterday, I said, tell me the ending, and he wouldn't tell me. So I went to MovieSpoiler.com, but their synopsis was so amorphous. I knew it was a downer ending, but I didn't know how much of a downer ending it was by their synopsis. So I blame you, Movie Spoiler. You suck. Anyway, you don't suck. You've been very helpful for many other movies. But whoever, I'm going to find out who did the synopsis and go, bad boy. Bad, bad writer. Free Fire, quickly. Free Fire is a movie by an Englishman named Ben Wheatley, who is known for doing... He did two episodes of Doctor Who in 2014, which is cool.
Mm.
He did a movie called High Rise. He's well known as sort of like a budding Quentin Tarantino, which is kind of cool. Yeah, exactly. Well, that's it. Tarantino would have done... And he works with a screenwriter named Amy Jump. And they worked on this movie, Free Fire. And Free Fire starts as a very clever movie about... When I was reviewing it in my little capsule Facebook review, I said, you know, imagine it's another one of those movies where if every gun sale or drug sale went down the way in reality, the way they do in movies, there would be no drugs or guns. And this is another one of those movies where they set up a gun sale. There are a bunch. It's a gun smugglers are selling guns to, I think, the Irish terrorists or whatever. And it goes not even it should have gone spectacularly wrong, but it just goes wrong. And so for 90 minutes to an hour and 45 minutes, all these lovely characters played by Brie Larson, Gillian Murphy, Armie Hammer, yeah, and Charlito Copley, and among others, those are the main actors, are pinned down trying to get out of this place, but actually it's sort of more like trying to kill each other and doing a piss-poor job of it.
I had not even... You said you were going to go see this film, and I had no idea what you were talking about.
And I went to see this film, and I was not miserable the way I was in this one we just saw, but I was bored. Because if it had been John Woo, if it had been Quentin Tarantino, it would have been inventive and entertaining. And I appreciate that they tried to make it kind of a little more realistic with characters who weren't, you know, who weren't clever and quippy. But by 45 minutes in, I was dying for a Quentin Tarantino quip. I was just dying. And John Woo, you know...
Were you, like, the only person in the theater?
No, there were a couple of others, but not a lot. And, like, three other people in the theater. But if you, listener, have not seen John Woo's A Better Tomorrow 1 and 2, The Killer, and especially Hard Boiled, go find them on download or DVD or whatever, wherever, and see that instead of Free Fire. Free Fire was fun. No, it wasn't. It was. It could have been fun.
Retracted.
It should have been more fun than it was. I appreciated the attempt, but come on, if you're going to do this, be clever. You know, have do your setups and then do your payoffs so the audience can go, ha ha, yeah, that's okay. Rather than just sort of okay, because I was just, this is an okay movie. I mean, literally okay. All I did during the whole movie went okay, good job. All right, off of Free Fire. Now, do you want to do the ones we all saw, or do you want to do the one that I promised I would see and you guys haven't seen yet that we talked about in the last episode?
Do we want to push that one? Do you, like, how much do you want us to actually see it?
I think you would enjoy it, and I'm going to tell you why.
I would enjoy it, too.
He would, I wouldn't.
I think you would, because you like Triple X.
Yeah, but, like...
You like Triple X.
That was a very weird exception.
It's a little different than Triple X.
You know what, to be honest, I remember when Tokyo Drift came out, I liked it because I fucking liked Japan.
Right.
When I was that age.
We're talking about Fate of the Furious, or F8, or Fate. And as I said on the last episode that we spoke, I thought I was going to enjoy it, and I did. It's not as good as 7 or 6.
Really?
Because of the climax with the submarine, it's just the submarine is just not as inventive as the plane and the other things. Mm-hmm. But there are several sequences I defy you not to enjoy. And the thing that I really loved about it, and we'll be talking about this about the next film too, is I love it when movies give you visual hints as to how to set your mind. I like the movie telling you how to set your mind in order to enjoy it. And this movie, Fate of the Furious, starts almost exactly like Triple X does.
I mean,
almost exactly. Except instead of skating boards, it's, you know, cars in Cuba and stuff. But, and then, it's just amazing. They set it up, especially what they set up, and this is very funny, I just found this out. What makes this movie work, beyond Vin Diesel, very clearly what makes this movie work, is The Rock and Jason Statham.
Any movie with The Rock.
They set up Jason Statham and The Rock beautifully. They established The Rock almost instantly because they make it a conflict between the two of them, between Jason Statham and The Rock's character, right?
Oh, okay.
And so the moment that happens, so we have the Triple X opening, which is kind of fun with the cars and all the stuff. All right, cool. We got the villain having her way with our hero, Vin Diesel. And then The Rock and Jason Statham show up. The Rock is introduced with a brilliant Moana-like scene. And I'm going to say brilliant.
You're welcome.
Okay, that's intriguing.
It's really, you will enjoy those sections. Then when they're both sent to jail through, you know, artifice and contrivance, and Vin Diesel turning on them. Mm. And then they start, then Jason Statham is in the jail. He's, and The Rock is imprisoned directly across from Jason Statham. And they start going at each other verbally. And then because the gates open, because Kurt Russell gets involved and opens the gates, and they go at each other physically. And in that fight, I just went, oh, this is so nice. I'm getting chills just remembering it. They instantly establish The Rock as Hercules. Mm-hmm. They establish him as a muscle-bound... I mean, he...
Well, Jason Statham is also one of them, but not compared to The Rock.
Here we go. Wait a minute. Let me finish.
Okay. You didn't see the movie.
The Rock... rips the Rock punches a armored car and puts a dent in it.
Are you
the
Rock, kidding?
The Rock pulls a cement table out of his jail cell wall. I'm saying they're making him Godzilla, you know, they're making him Hercules. But then, even more brilliant is that they don't make Jason Statham the same thing. Mm-hmm. They make him the martial arts kung fu guy. They make him the energy redirector. It's genius how they establish, and they go at each other beautifully, and you believe, because I've always said, you know, love and inner energy will beat muscles and anger anytime. Mm-hmm. They show it. Mm-hmm. They show it.
And well, that's like, why you like this movie.
Well, more than that, because it's brilliantly done, and then later, oh, there's... Once it's established why Vin Diesel's character has turned on his team, Vin Diesel is not inactive. Vin Diesel is constantly trying to find a way, and that's part of the joy of the movie, too, find a way around the thing that's blackmailing him to do what he has to do.
Okay.
And they do set up and payoffs. This is another example.
Since you already talked about the movie, do you want to just let us know, like, the plot?
You can spoil it.
You can spoil
if you've been holding back, by all means, don't.
Well, not really. I just want to, you know, I know, of course not. I'm not going to hold back. There's so much fun in this movie. You broke my thought train. That's all right.
Got me.
What happens is Vin Diesel is trying to circumvent the situation, leading to some delightful sequences of things paying off in the first scene. Because in the first scene, this guy tries to kill him during the race, this Cuban guy, and Vin Diesel does not tear his head off and shit down his neck. He just gives him his car. And somebody, even the villainess mentions this. She says, why are you wasting your time with crud like him? And he makes the message that basically, like my father used to say, you got to give everybody their chance to be their best selves. And later on in the movie, that pays off.
Mm-hmm.
Ah. And it pays off.
When that shit happens.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
And also it leads to the wonderful presentation of Helen Mirren as Jason Statham's mom. She is awesome.
I'm intrigued.
It's an awesome movie. And then it leads to, while Vin Diesel is on the ground.
Tell me Judy Dench is in it, I'm sold.
Well, Helen Mirren is this movie's Judy Dench, and her performance is wonderful. And the relationship between her and Jason Statham is wonderful. And, you know, oh, mom, you know, it's like so cool. And she's just cold as ice. I mean, she's a crime lord.
Yeah.
She's an English crime lord. It's just so great. And then what happens is that in order to save Vin Diesel's son, which is why his son is being held captive by the villain.
Wait, he has a son now?
He has a son because he had sex with that English woman 2 movies ago. This movie all connects to the other movies. And she gets...
Use protections, kid.
She gets executed. She gets executed. The mother gets executed.
Oh, what the fuck, yo?
Yeah, by the villainous.
Ugh.
But
have the
case,
baby, then fucking die.
Yeah, but then they saved. But then, in order to get they're in a plane. The villainous's headquarters is in a gigantic plane.
Wait, do we
plane.
See the mom die in this movie, or they just like, oh, she's dead?
No. They show Vin Diesel's face as she's shot in front of him through the glass.
Okay.
But it's effective. It's very effective.
I mean,
but it makes you very happy that what happens next, or not next, but eventually, where Jason Statham is sent by his mother to rescue the child on the plane.
How old's the kid?
A little tiny baby.
I remember seeing that in the trailer. That was an entertaining scene.
It is an
awesome
scene, and also it is very clearly, again, I'm telling you listeners, go see Hard Boiled. Because this scene, the scene on the plane with Jason Statham, has the child in a carrier. and he's killing everybody while he's put things in the kid's ears.
Oh, I was going to say, yeah, damage the kid.
No, he takes care of the kid, but he's holding the kid while he's killing everybody and talking to the kid, which comes right out of Hard Boiled. There's a scene with Chow Yun-Fat rescuing a baby from a nursery in a hostage hospital, which is clearly inspired this sequence. But to watch Jason Statham do his martial arts with a gun as well as his martial arts on the plane, just effing awesome.
You know, I have to say, I've never seen a Jason Statham film.
Well, look, but the interesting
Transporter.
Thing...
Why the fuck did I
Transporter.
See these movies?
Oh, but then again, he's Frank. Always been the star I've been waiting to happen. This is going to make him the star because...
Oh, wait, no, he was in Spy with Melissa McCarthy.
That's right, and he was great in that, too.
Oh, yeah.
I only saw that because it was free here.
Yeah, but here's the deal.
Oh, Expendables? Okay.
Yeah, here's the deal. Yeah, he was very good in Expendables. He was fighting Scott Atkins, and he did a very nice job. But... This is something else I just found out. Originally, I watched the whole movie. I really enjoyed it, and I was waiting for a post-credit sequence.
Romeo and Juliet? Sorry, and I'm just going through
that's all right. There was no post-credit sequence, and I was disappointed. And then I found out later, there had been a post-credit sequence setting up the next movie. And what the next movie is The Rock and Jason Statham. No Vin Diesel.
Oh,
just The Rock. And they're going to have their own series.
Break.
And according to the crew of this movie, Vin Diesel shot down that post-credit sequence personally.
Wow.
But everybody understood it. They said, we understand that it's stealing thunder from you, and you are the star of this movie. But
it's his franchise.
It is his franchise, and I admire what he's done. This crew member also mentioned that the two of them, The Rock and Vin Diesel, are they're civil with each other, but they're never in the. You'll see in the movie. They're never in the same scene.
Oof.
They're never in the same scene. Yeah, and The Rock
all about the family, yo.
And The Rock went public with this. The Rock put it on his Twitter.
Yeah, he said he like subtweeted.
But although it didn't mention Vin Diesel specifically,
it's called a subtweet.
Subtweet. Thank you. I don't know. I'm an old man with a beard. So I really enjoyed F8, especially for the Jason Statham Rock stuff. And for there's another extremely clever scene where the villainous takes over the computers of every car in New York. And she goes, let it rain, and all the cars just go driving out of parking garages onto the street.
That's awesome.
It's all digital. But it's still very cool. So, yeah, F8 was
good. It's not all digital.
No, it's not all digital, but the raining scene is.
Right.
The raining scene is.
I would say the ride at Universal was... Never mind.
I'm getting the director's cut DVD in advance, so we'll have a screening.
I'm reading he's going to be in a film in 2018 called Meg, and it's about him and a team going to rescue Chinese scientists who trapped undersea and they're under attack from a 70-foot great white shark named Carcharodon Megalodon.
Oh, no.
That Chinese
Who directed it? That's right. Who directed it?
It comes out in 2018. Oh, it's directed by John...
Jason Statham?
Turtletaub.
Yeah, John Turtletaub. Oh, shit.
Yeah, it stars Jason Statham. And Ruby Rose is in it, whatever.
I was looking through his sci-fi
movie.
Yeah, it's like a sci-fi horror film.
Okay.
So anyway. I didn't lie in our last our April Showers review. I did like F8. Now let's go to the star of the show, the movie I'm going to go home tonight and see again so I get the taste of this awful movie we just saw out of my mouth.
Yeah, I'm watching happy shit tonight.
And that is Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. I'd be very curious to see, because I saw that 4 days before you guys did in Hong Kong.
Mm-hmm.
I was in Hong Kong where it opened April 26th, and I saw it at a beautiful movie theater in Hong Kong.
Have you seen a U.S. cut?
No, okay. I have not. So
I'm curious to see what's the difference.
We should go to that right now so I can get this movie we just saw out of my head. I'd be very curious at the difference, too. I mean, it was subtitled, you know. Mm-hmm. I didn't see...
How different could it be?
That's what my question
There's
is.
Always cuts made
No,
in
I know
China.
That. I know yeah. that. But right. I'm like, usually it's like because they want to make it more China-friendly, but I'm like, I don't really feel like...
Well, they also add in Chinese character that might not have been in the U.S. version.
How long... Oh. Do you remember how long yours was?
That's about 2 hours and some.
Yeah,
it's like 2:20, I feel like.
This might have been 2:17. It'll only be a matter of minutes anyway.
I think so.
Yeah. So I'll go again. And I'll let you know our next podcast where we're all three talking.
Mm-hmm.
But as I mentioned earlier, I love when a movie tells you how to set your mind in order to enjoy it best. And the opening of Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 so clearly did that. Do you remember what the opening was?
Yeah, it was with the girl and the
Groot.
No, it was with Groot.
Yeah, it was with Groot.
Oh, the fight. Okay, the opening
scene.
No, I forgot. It was like that happened, and then it was the credits, and then it was his mom on Earth with the dad.
Yeah,
right.
But that felt like it would be an opening.
The very, very first.
Yeah, the very first was just the whole fight dance.
The
whole
fight. Yeah, they want to set the movie out.
There's no fight.
Yeah.
That's the point. That's what I loved about it. When that happened, my mouth started to grin, and my grin got bigger and bigger because James Gunn was clearly, he might as well have leaned down in 3D over the audience and goes, don't pay attention to what's happening behind it, just enjoy. Just enjoy Groot, because if you remember, there was a huge fight behind him, but all you saw was Groot.
Groot-centric, two-minute dance-off.
No.
That was him dancing.
That was literally them putting Groot on the screen and being like, we're sorry we didn't have the Funko Pop figure out in time.
We didn't have the toys
in
the first one.
We didn't know. We learned from our mistake. Here, take him.
But also very clearly, he's saying, don't pay attention to the details.
Mm-hmm.
The fight details are not important. What's important is that you have a good time.
I enjoyed the little details, though.
So did I.
She didn't really agree with me. Didn't really agree with me. I was going to say, like, the layout artist who did the previous scene, who set up the whole thing, it must be a great challenge and fun.
That's not what you were saying. You were saying you thought the previous artist had fun.
Because imagine like looking at a central character who's dancing, but all the background fights has to come.
The previous guy isn't doing that part.
He is, though.
No, he's not.
They're setting up a staging system of like where the camera is and how the actions should play out in the background. Still readable, coherent FI actions in the background while this main character Groot is dancing the foreground. It's a fun challenge.
It's a great challenge, and I'm glad you mentioned it. I was going to stop you and saying that you should take this up personally, but then I realized this is awesome. Your conversation of the technical aspects of the filmmaking, kind of filmmaking, is awesome, and I really appreciate it. And keep arguing.
Liked it too. I was just saying, like, it didn't feel like it was.
You didn't think they were having fun. You just thought they were having a really difficult time.
Because it's like, it's one thing to watch it at the end and be like, yeah, this guy's having fun, but it's like, for me, it was like seeing how complicated that was. How much they had to track. I was like, that was not fun. That was like this guy literally sitting there, like trying to figure it out. He probably had a top down map and like tracking the path and trying to figure it all out.
Yeah, but it's just not one guy. It's a team
of
people.
Well, you don't know that.
It's more than likely.
But like, it's more than likely it's a team of people who try to figure it out.
We put one person on a crazy shot here.
Yeah.
Because
again, the important thing with that shot was that movement really didn't matter.
Right.
Like that camera perspective, that specific camera, that wasn't telling the story. The story of that camera move didn't matter. Groot was what mattered.
Right.
Right.
Now, the interesting thing, though, is that whether that guy was having fun and whether that guy wasn't having fun
doesn't matter.
But no, it does matter because his job was to make sure we had fun.
Yeah.
Yes.
His job
and
was.
And we did.
And so, can you imagine? Although I bet, knowing all the artists I've ever met, when he was in the screening room, all he saw was what he could, what he didn't do.
Yeah.
All he saw was the stuff I wouldn't see. You might have seen it.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I would not have seen it. I'm just sitting there smiling, going, what a great idea.
Yeah, it's a great shot.
What a great idea, though.
Right. It's very creative, and it's different from a lot of movies.
Yeah.
It's a creative
telling
problem.
Telling the audience.
It's fun. When you're solving a creative problem, it's fun.
Yeah. But also, coming up with the concept.
Right.
The concept. That's what makes the Marvel movies, that's what makes the Disney movies, that's what makes James Gunn's Guardian of the Galaxy movies so good, is that he's willing to do something like that. While so many, like this movie and many other movies, Free Fire was a good example, would have just done the pedantic thing.
I don't see, but I feel like I'm like the buzzkill here, because as much as I do agree with that,
you are.
A part of me...
You are indeed.
Felt like, and maybe because now we're seeing all these films try to tap into that same vein of like, like, you know, we're cool, but we don't care. We're not really trying. Where I'm like, you're trying so hard to be cool right now.
Wait a minute. What movies? I don't agree with that estimation.
I mean, like, Deadpool is a perfect example. The attempts at making Suicide Squad more fun.
Well,
whatever.
Suicide Squad, I have, because that.
I got a bad example. Thor. Have you seen a new trailer for Thor?
But that's directed by that New Zealand director of What We Did in the Shadows.
exactly, like, in terms of Thor, like, yeah. trilogy, yeah. that, the last one that just about to came yeah. out, that was so much alike with the tone in terms of that
the new
galaxy.
Spider-Man
yeah.
feels
they
that way
always
too.
Have, but Marvel has always had their sense of humor.
No, I understand
Suicide
that.
Squad does a lame, I mean, Ugh. DC is doing a lame job.
Yeah.
We're praying for Wonder Woman. We're all going to go see Wonder Woman.
Martha!
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I but, guess for me, it's just like, I just feel like...
But I don't think...
I think for me, it's like I'm just too self-aware of it, where it's like they had certain... Again, I was saying this to you before, but like yeah. they had certain checkboxes of like moments they wanted and
yeah,
character development they needed to squeeze into a scene.
Yeah, but Marvel does it... I mean, Disney does it well, and DC doesn't.
And by the way, I'm not like... I'm shitting on this, but I thoroughly enjoyed this movie.
Oh, yeah.
But like for me, it was also
Guardians
like...
Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
Yeah, yeah. But it's
but
like
a
on, a certain, on another level, I was just like...
The big
like,
difference...
Like you need this moment, you need this moment, you need this moment.
But the big difference to me in this... is the sheer length of that list in this film.
Yeah.
This film is crammed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This film is overstuffed.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that they had boxes to check in this movie is not as interesting to me as the fact that they didn't have 10 boxes.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have 20 boxes. They had 50 boxes
yeah.
in this
mm-hmm.
movie.
I think, and they still managed to have a crappy film.
Yeah.
A crappy what?
A crappy villain.
Oh, crap. Yeah, the Marvel is... I agree with Marvel that the villain
yeah.
is so... I mean, I'm about to finish the second novel in this new series that I'm writing now, and I keep on berating myself going, you know, Rick, you're just turning the villain into this cardboard cutout
yeah.
because you're so in love with your heroes.
Like, for
and
me,
I
like,
went,
one yeah. of the parts in the film that I did get taken out of the film was when the dad was, like, had, like, these pre-made assemble,
yeah.
like, you know, to explain the backstory.
Yeah.
It was like, and now here's the exposition scene complete
yeah.
with dioramas that I made.
Yeah, I know, exactly.
And I was just like, go fuck yourself.
But that's what I love.
But
it.
That's
yeah.
what I meant, though, where
yeah.
I was, like, so, I was just, like, so cynical to it because
yeah.
I was like, well, that's fucking convenient.
No, no, no.
I understand he's a
yeah.
god
yeah.
and he can do these
but
things.
But at the same time,
like,
if you think about it, it links with the story well.
I mean, obviously
end. Because
so
he has done this so many times to so many different his kids.
Tons.
Yeah,
yeah.
yeah. yeah.
And also, think about, compare it to the movie we just saw.
Well, yeah, I mean,
it's just, it's genius. I liked what Lee
it
Marvin...
It was not genius.
Yes, it was. Lee Marvin said, if you do your cliche straight, they'll be blinded by your genius.
Oh, my gosh. That
and
is
that's,
like not
that's
what
I agree.
Well, again, like, in the beginning, when you saw it, you're like, oh, my God, why would he have
yeah, but
that?
I love
but
that.
But then at the end, you're like, oh, he has done this with so oh. many other kids
yeah.
that he, like... explain this whole thing and then like find out they don't have the what is it, celestial
yeah.
you know genes, they just kill him
yeah.
This I just wrote a scene where my hero I'm coming to
the story.
I'm making for a climax
I'm not
Shh,
I'm, yeah, that's right. I'm making I'm doing the climax for my own novel and I'm having the hero meet the villain and the villain is a vampire who has or a blood demon who has inspired the legend of every vampire and at the end they're in the middle of a they're not in the middle they're on the edge of Afghanistan and they're amongst all the caves where bin Laden and stuff was, and our hero lands because he has to sacrifice himself, and the villain has dressed himself in a tuxedo and cape. He said, I thought you might like this.
Oh, my God.
And the hero throws his hands up and goes, heaven help me from a villain, from a vampire with a sense of humor. So I sort of, like, admired the diorama because it would be just the kind of thing that, but also there was a good reason for it. But anyway...
Right.
Guardians 2, written and directed by James Gunn. Stunt coordinator was Thomas Robinson Harper, who's doing Pirates 5. He's doing the new Pacific Rim Uprising. He's
Ooh.
Doing he's doing the new
you better
Godzilla.
Do a good job.
He did Winter Soldier. He did Guardian 1.
Oh, okay. All
the,
right.
The fight coordinator was James Young, who did Captain America Civil War.
Okay.
But
Ooh.
He was promoted to fight coordinator after being... stunt coordinator for Age of Ultron, for Avengers Age of mm-hmm. Ultron. So that's who did the action. Was there anything other than that opening sequence, which was clearly saying, don't look at the action, just have fun, just enjoy it, just enjoy what we're going to throw at you.
Mm-hmm.
Was there any action that was truly memorable?
No.
I mean, I remember the climactic sequence.
I remember memorable being bad, yeah.
Yeah.
And him having... sort of realize his power in the instant without prior knowledge of the whole, like, don't think with your brain. Yeah. Think with your heart.
I remember the one scene where they finally used
and they were fighting,
and he just
they're punching each other.
Yeah.
Right.
Again, like they're gods. They're two gods. They're punching each other. The only funny thing is with the Pac-Man and the whole
Pac-Man
thing. That was the only funny thing.
But you know, it's funny. The mindset absolutely worked and was absolutely accurate, because what I remember most about this movie, except for the guest stars, was Groot.
Mm-hmm. Well, for me, it's like I like Rocket.
There are three.
Rocket was awesome.
But there were three Groot scenes that I felt were unforgettable.
The Finn.
The opening, yes. Going to get the Finn.
That was so cute.
And then the end credit teenage Groot.
Oh, see, I was.
Which was, I thought was genius.
Yeah.
That was funny.
I thought
that
was,
really
was great.
For me, it was interesting because one of the things my brother and I had talked about before this movie was how he, like, reads the Guardians of the Galaxy comics, and he was saying how Groot in the comic book, like, he just needs, like, to be exposed to, like, sunlight and water,
and
he instantly grows up again.
Right.
And for me, I was like, even if that's the case, like, first of all, obviously, he's very popular. They wanted to keep him small. But I was like, oh, that also, like, that helped a lot because that was one less body to deal with.
But I maintain that Groot's story in the first one was so good and so complete that I'm glad they didn't return to that.
But that's what I was saying. Like, it was just one less thing. Like, we got our Rocket moment. We got Gamora and
also,
Nebula.
Groot,
in
terms of powers, like, among the Guardians of the Galaxy, Groot has the most power.
Right.
Like, if he's full grown, he would, like, destroy a lot of people.
I would argue.
The other thing.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
With the first film? And, like, even with his baby, he can grow vines out of his hands.
He has a sweet and simple mind.
I would say he's also an idiot.
Yeah. He's sweet and simple mind, I like that.
Unless Rocket.
But I'm also fairly certain, on the basis of my understanding of the story writing process at Disney, is that I don't think, and I bet, I would imagine you, I hope you think the same, that anyone came to James Gunn and said, we want to keep him small.
Mm-hmm.
James Gunn went, I'm going to keep him small.
Yeah.
You know, this is a good example. I was telling
sense.
You, I was at Hong Kong.
Sense.
I was at Hong Kong, and I didn't have any good Hong Kong food.
Yeah.
And I think that's because every single chef in Hong Kong is sad now. is miserable, and it comes out in the food. And you can see in the Disney movies, which include Marvel, which include Star Wars, there's real joy involved.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
These guys are just doing
having
their dream jobs.
Yeah.
So in any case, Guardians was overstuffed. At times I thought it was, I didn't blame James Gunn for saying, well, the first one was a huge success, who knows what'll happen tomorrow, so I'm just going to put everything I ever wanted to put in.
Mm-hmm. I just love that Groot was popular because of the end credit of the first one.
Yeah.
He wasn't small throughout the film. It's just the last
the
one, just that dancing woman.
Everybody.
And everybody fall in love with him.
And as usual for this movie, it wasn't the action or the fighting as much as the comedy and the pathos
and the characters
and the romance and the heartfelt stuff and the fine acting I remember all that stuff extremely well and with extreme and the guest stars.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they brought Sylvester Stallone.
Oh yes.
Michelle Yeoh.
Yes.
Bing Rames. Miley Cyrus.
Oh yeah. Well, those are the new. Those are the.
Those
second.
Are the new ones.
Well, yeah. Those are the other Guardians of the Galaxy. Yeah,
those are the galaxy. Those are the ones who are going to show up after the next two
Wait,
Avengers.
Were they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
Oh
At
yeah.
The end, there's a new. There's another team. There's
another
Guardians
team.
Of the Galaxy.
Oh, I didn't.
And
know
they
that.
may appear in the Infinity Wars.
Okay.
But they probably won't. They probably will appear
that's like an established
afterwards.
Team.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Again, I only my brother.
Wait.
Like,
so was the guy with the fin? Was he a part of the Guardians of the Galaxy?
That's maybe? I believe that's James Gunn's brother.
Okay.
I think the actor is Sean Gunn.
Oh, I don't even. Know.
I think so. I'll have
idea.
Again check the supplemental.
All I know is he was Merle in The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe
Merle.
Not then. But in any case, it was overstuffed, but it still was wildly entertaining. It was a very full meal.
I'm trying to think of action, though.
No, really, you know, except for the
like,
opening fight.
I'm trying
fight.
To think of, like, with anything with, like, Nebula, there's nothing. The scene where where Rocket defends their ship from, like, the all of the,
that was great.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Like, that was just funny. That wasn't even, like...
Yeah, and also, there's such wonderful moments, like, with, I keep on thinking there is Amy Pond from Doctor Who, when she keeps on wanting to eat that fruit. and they keep on telling her it's not ripe. And she finally eats it, and Karen Gillan. And she goes, not ripe. It's those moments. I mean, it was just
a
huge feast.
Like, for me, I kind of was surprised they brought Nebula back.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of was like, why?
Well, that's the way the checkbox is. They were trying to establish every single character in Guardians of the Galaxy.
But I'm saying that wasn't a good enough excuse.
I understand
that. Like, because Gamora needs to be developed. I mean, I appreciate them trying to develop her character outside of her relationship with Star-Lord.
Right, right.
But, like, she could also just develop as her own self.
Right, but she has no conflict.
And she came back.
She had a conflict. She was, obviously her sister is literally, like,
right,
a robot. Yeah. Like, she herself is also kind of a robot.
Yeah.
Right, yeah, but then she didn't have anyone to have that conflict
with.
She
has an entire team to have conflict with.
Yeah, so here's the deal. She came back because James Gunn wanted her back
and
knew that most of us would probably be glad that she came back.
Oh, yeah.
Lord knows I was glad.
That was good.
Yeah, for a film with such a big ensemble cast, I think they handled it well.
And I have to say...
But it really was, for me, it really... Sometimes it boiled down to, like, oh, this is, like, your character development scene.
I was going to say that the character development between, her fight with Nebula,
mm-hmm.
that was satisfying. Like,
The movie was satisfying.
It's hard to make two characters that hate each other so much and come together so quickly.
And that was
satisfying.
Yeah, but that was the whole thing, though. It's like, oh, we're sisters. Like,
but that's what I liked about it.
Yeah.
Because that's true about sisters, but many sisters. But the point here was that... It could have, I believe, if it had been shortened and tightened, it probably would have been even better.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But the point is, it was still, I could forgive it anything,
mm-hmm.
especially after that first scene.
And yeah, but you're like a Disney defender.
I'm a Disney defender because Disney, but Disney doesn't require my defense because the reason I defend Disney is that they have saved me so many times.
Have you seen the new Beauty and the Beast yet?
No, I have not.
Okay.
It's not actually an action film, though.
Yeah, I'm aware of that.
I understand that, but...
But you didn't like it.
I haven't seen it.
Oh, well, none of us have seen it.
No.
But then again, the ratio is still great.
Mm.
There's great... The ratio of really of good or superior Disney movies to inferior Disney movies
I would say
is remarkable.
Anything but Disney feature... that it's good.
Yeah.
Like, Disney film itself is not good. Like, Disney division, Marvel division, great. Star Wars, great.
I love it.
Pixar, great.
Yeah.
Feature, great. Disney live action films,
Well,
that's where all the Princess remake was from.
It's really interesting. You know, you can tell my age from the television channels, my go-to television channels, although my mental age and my physical age. My physical age, TCM. My mental age, Disney and Cartoon Network.
Mm-hmm.
If you turn on my TV, invariably it'll be on one of those channels.
Yep.
And I have to say, Disney, although I like Cartoon Network better, the only thing I don't like about Cartoon Network is their primetime schedule. Everything up to their primetime schedule and everything after their primetime schedule, Adult Swim,
mm-hmm.
and is awesome.
Yeah.
But the repeats of King of the Hill and Family Guy, starting at 8 p.m.
Holy cow!
But everything else, so
you have to get past an hour and a half of just garbage before you can get to the good stuff.
If I was a gambling man, which I'm not, I would always bet on Disney.
Mm.
Beyond 20th Century Fox, beyond Warner Brothers, beyond Paramount.
I always bet
on Disney.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
in terms of
betting
ratio, they do have a.
I come out feeling
betting.
Good,
mm-hmm.
admiring. I mean, I can name the ones I have disliked in recent years on one hand.
What?
Well, The Good Dinosaur,
uh-huh.
inexplicable.
Mm-hmm.
Cars 2,
yeah.
inexplicable.
And Cars 3.
What was Cars? Well, have you seen Cars 3?
It's not out yet.
It's okay. not out yet.
Yeah, but we have
based on the trailers.
I have my expectations.
I'm not watching any of it.
Yeah, and
you're not watching Cars 3.
And what else have I missed? What else have I missed? Those two were really confusing. They both could have been good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, and Brave.
Oh yeah, Brave was.
But Brave, I have the explanation for, which was How to Train Your Dragon ripped it off,
yeah.
and so they had to do a massive salvage job at the
Brave
last
was,
possible
was,
second.
Was a shame because
I would say Brave was
been,
just an unfortunate
was a
case of like.
Yeah. It's a very beautiful
other movie. Like things getting in the way.
Well, specifically having their plot stolen.
Yeah.
By DreamWorks.
And then Brenda Chapman getting taken off of it.
Because she wanted to keep doing it, and they had to get that made for TV guy to do it instead, using a made for TV movie plot
mm-hmm.
from Brother Bear. But I think we've discussed this before. But anyway, are we done? Are we good?
I think so.
Let's see where we are in the thing. Anyway, so everybody, thank you so much for your patience with the, yeah, we're over an hour as usual. So are you ready for the sign-off?
I always get it wrong.
Yes, but that's part of the delightful charm. That's part of your delightful charm. People are now kind of like betting on what you're going to do this time. So let's try to do it this time already. On the count of three. One, two, three. Use your blinkers, jackass.
Hey,
and don't tailgate.
Yeah, hey.
Okay, break it up. Break it up. For now.
You don't give up, girl.
Listen in next time for more Film Fun Frenzy and Friends. Until then, check out actionfilmautopsy.com, where the excitement never ends.
An honor, victory.